Welcome to episode 1445 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive. 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are continuing our series on the life and times of the apostles. Focus this week on the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter left the shore of the Sea of Galilee to follow Jesus after witnessing the miraculous catch of fish and receiving the call to become a fisher of people. Today we encounter one of the most famous moments in Peter's life that teaches him a lesson he will spend the rest of his life trying to understand. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 5.
By the time I stepped out of that boat, I had been following Jesus for months. I want you to hold that, not days, months. I had watched him heal a man with an unclean spirit in our own synagogue in Capernaum. I had watched him take my mother-in-law's fever away with a word and a touch. I had seen him heal people who came to the door of our house at sundown, crowds of them, case after case, until the night was gone. I had seen a man with leprosy made clean. I had seen a paralyzed man lowered through a roof by his friends and sent home walking. In those months, I heard him speak of trusting the Father, loving enemies, seeking first the kingdom, and living without fear. I admired the words. I had not yet learned that he intended to make me live them. You might think I had gotten to know him well, and I thought I had. The water that night taught me how much I still did not understand. It had been an extraordinary day, even by the standards of the extraordinary days we were accumulating. 5,000 men, and that count did not include the women and children, had followed Jesus to a remote place on the far shore. It was late, they were hungry, and we had 5 loaves and 2 fish between us. I will not dwell on what happened next except to say that everyone ate until they were satisfied, and we collected 12 baskets of leftovers. 12. I counted them myself because I did not trust my own eyes. The crowd's reaction was immediate. They wanted to make him king by force. I heard them saying it, felt the energy shift the way it does when a crowd stops being a crowd and becomes something with a single mind. Jesus saw it before any of us did. He dispersed them firmly, efficiently, the way you might lead a flock away from a cliff edge, without letting them know that is what you were doing. And then he sent us ahead across the lake and went up the hillside alone to pray. Just like that, into the dark, by himself, while we rowed. I remember thinking, as we pushed off from shore, he does that. Disappears into prayer at the moments when any sensible leader would be consolidating his position. I did not understand it then. I understand it better now. We had been rowing for hours. The wind was against us, one of those Kinneret storms that comes down from the hills without warning and turns the crossing into a fight. We were somewhere in the middle of the lake, in the fourth watch of the night, which means it was somewhere between 3 and 6 in the morning. We were tired and wet and making poor progress, and no one was talking much. That is when someone saw him, a figure, on the water, moving toward us. The fear was instant and total. We had been raised on the sea. We knew what it held and what it did not hold. And what it did not hold was a man walking on its surface in the middle of the night, in the middle of a storm. Someone said the word we were all thinking.
Do you see what I'm seeing? Is that a ghost?
And then the voice came across the water, and even through the wind, even at that distance, I knew it.
Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid.
Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. 3 commands. And something in me, that same something that had said because you say so in the boat with the empty nets, responded before my mind had finished processing what my eyes were seeing. Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to you on the water. If it is you. Even then, I needed to be sure. Even then, faith and doubt were living in the same breath.
Come.
One word, and I got out of the boat. I have been asked whether I was brave or foolish. The honest answer is, I do not think those were separate things in that moment. I stepped over the side and my feet found the water and the water held, and I walked toward him, on the surface of the Kinneret, in the dark, in the wind. For a few steps I walked, and then I felt the wind, really felt it, not as background, not as the weather we were rowing through, but as a force with intentions. And I looked away from him, down at the water beneath my feet, at the impossibility of what I was standing on, and I began to sink. Lord, save me. Three words, the shortest prayer I have ever prayed, and his hand was there before the prayer was finished.
Oh, you of little faith. Why did you doubt?
Not a rebuke exactly. More like a question he genuinely wanted me to sit with. Why did you doubt? Not, how could you doubt after everything you have seen? But, what was it in that moment that pulled your eyes from me to the wind? I have been sitting with that question ever since.
Why are you surprised that the wind obeys its maker? You fear many things, storms, hunger, Rome, tomorrow. Yet your father holds all of them in his hand. Faith is not pretending the storm is not there. Faith is remembering who is with you in the storm. The wind changes, the waves rise and fall, but the father does not change. Learn to build your lives on what does not change.
When we climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped, just like that. And the men who had watched all of this, men who had seen the healings, the feeding, all of it, did something they had not done before. They worshipped him. Not gratitude, not amazement, worship. They said, "Truly you are the Son of God." I said nothing. I was still thinking about the wind. I was still thinking of sinking in that water and the panic I felt. When Jesus had reached for my hand, I grabbed and squeezed it tightly. I was shaking. I still was as the men continued to wonder and worship. And as Jesus sat among us on the boat. Here is what I have come to understand about that night after years of turning it over. The water walking was not primarily a demonstration of power. He had demonstrated power before. I had seen it, 12 baskets of it just hours earlier. This was something different. This was an invitation into the impossible, and a lesson administered in the middle of it. As long as I looked at him, I walked. The moment I looked at the storm, at the very real, very legitimate danger surrounding me, I sank. Not because the danger was not real. It was real. The wind was real. But the one who had said come was also real, and I could only fully attend to one of them at a time. I have sunk more times than I can count since that night. The mechanism is always the same. The wind gets loud. I look at it, and for a moment I forget that there is a hand already reaching.
Most of us can identify with Peter. We begin with courage, step out in faith, and then become distracted by the very real winds and waves surrounding us. Financial pressures, health concerns, disappointments, fears, and uncertainties. Jesus never denied that the storm existed. The wind was real, and the danger was real. Yet Peter discovered that faith grows when we focus more on the presence of Christ than on the power of the storm. The good news is that even when our faith falters and we begin to sink, Jesus remains near enough to hear our cry and strong enough to take hold of our hand. The story is not ultimately about Peter's ability to walk on water. It is about Jesus' ability to sustain imperfect disciples who are learning to trust him. To be continued.